Hey, podcasters, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol. On today's podcast, I'm without my cohort, Jill Simonello, who is currently running around Chicago. She's a marathon this weekend, so kind of some things going on. So we're going to give her a break in this week and let her get ready for her big race. Sorry about the podcast not being out last week. I had a little family emergency. Everything's fine, and thank you for your thoughts on that. Everything's good. We just needed to take care of some family business and then get back to the office. So speaking of getting back to the office, I got a slew of stories I put out last couple days as I was getting things caught up. Starting with my trip to Texas, to the State Fair of Texas, I was there with Chevy, and they had some big news. Turns out this year is the 100th anniversary of Chevy trucks, going back to 1918 when they basically had a parts mover. They used it in the warehouse to move parts around. Essentially, that was the first Chevy truck. And so what they decided to do to mark 100 years, as we were down there talking to the chief designer who was unveiling a new logo. The logo is really cool. It's just kind of a throwback. They went through, looked at all the older bow ties that were on the market over the years, and they took the new Chevy take on it, and they took the bow tie and they made a new logo with the font is a stock Chevrolet font from the 1960s. They actually were able to go back into the files and find the font. They have this really neat blue color that they decided to put out for the new trucks. They're going to have a new Chevy Colorado and a new Chevy Silverado. They are going to be the centennial editions, 100 year editions. The Silverado will be out in October. The Colorado will be out in November. Some highlights of these vehicles is they're going to be the Silverado will be in the LTZ Z71 trim only. It's going to be crew cab only. It has front and rear heritage bow tie emblems. That's their badge. The spray and bed liner has a heritage bow tie as well. And then it's on the floor liners, and it's got the Centennial Blue exterior paint. 22-inch wheels, all-terrain tires, chrome tow hooks, the whole thing. Chrome bow tie on the steering wheel. Chrome bow tie on the steering wheel. The Colorado will be the Z71 trim, crew cab and extended cab. Oh, I see a typo on the website as I read this, so I'll be fixing that typo here in a minute. Front and rear bow ties, the 100-year door badge. The 100-year door badge is a little bit different, so it's got the bow tie on the side. Then in the font, it says 100-year on it, so it's just a different badge. Spray and bed liner with heritage bow tie emblem. Same idea, floor liners, the chrome tow hooks, the 18-inch wheels in this one with the optional monochromatic cap. So those were really cool, that the two trucks they unveiled. Excuse me there. But was really cool was they had a 67 C10 Centennial SEMA truck. They can show it off at SEMA. This is the 67. I love the C10 look. Beautiful white interior. They really cleaned the interior up quite well, and the beautiful blue color plus the Centennial badging on the front and the grill. Fantastic. Unfortunately, they had a dealer meeting at the same time, and I wasn't able to drool over the 67 as long as I wanted to, so I had to kind of move around. I will be looking for this truck in the future to take more photos and really check it out. Sweet wheels, too. Make sure to check us out on the pickuptrucktalk.com. I cannot talk today. pickuptrucktalk.com, where you can find all the information about the trucks, and also they're going to launch expanded Chevy Truck Legends program, which is where the truck owners get together, and they have a big event coming up for those owners, and they have more ChevyGearUSA.com for all your Chevy gear. Okay, there's my plug for them. So it was really cool talking to the designer and getting an idea of how much effort he goes into designing these trucks. He's a lifelong Chevy guy, just the way his upbringing was. So other news, before we went to the Chevy press conference, Ram had two big unveilings. I mean, big. First, they had the Laramie Longhorn South Fork Edition. This is another special Texas Edition truck. And then they had the Ram Heavy Duty Lone Star Silver Edition. Yes, we have a bunch of new names. All right, so here's the deal. The Ram Laramie Longhorn South Fork Edition, it basically just takes the Laramie Longhorn and adds more luxury, technology, and detail. The Heavy Duty Lone Star Silver is a big heavy duty truck, and it's for Texas only. That's about the two differences. Trying to see. Oh, it's the South Fork adds new Canyon Brown and Light Frost Beige Natural plus 100% full grain leather seats. They made a big point about this, which is kind of interesting, is that the seats have leather on the front, the rear, the bottom side, the top side, all the way around. They have leather, as opposed to the competition that doesn't. Okay. I don't know if the leather on the back of the seat is that big of a deal. Interesting. It has a light gray stone suede headliner. And I'm going to talk to you more about headliners in a minute, because we had another conversation about this as well. It just is a beautiful truck. They did the wood grain and walnut trimmed steering wheel throughout. It just looks fantastic. The other truck, the Ram Heavy Duty Lone Star Silver Edition, is basically another trim level. It's going to be joins the heavy duty styling or heavy duty capability. They didn't put it in the press release, but I found this really fascinating. They had parked this truck. They had put it on a trailer, and it actually was literally, it wasn't an RV. It was like an RV on steroids. It was a moving mobile home, like literally a mobile home. It was a 3x3 setup as far as the tires, which I'm surprised it didn't have more. The thing was so long that I couldn't get it in one photo. I was surprised there were no details on this because it was just fantastic, the size of it. And what's interesting was I was talking to the rep about it, and this trailer was $250,000. Yeah, $250,000 for a literal mobile home. Just think of like a big fifth wheel RV and add another half. Like take it like one and a half. That's about the size of this thing. And he was remarking how the heavy duty Lone Star, you know, with the 4x4 package and things, is probably going to be about the MSRP is going to be $55,000 for 2,500. In this case, it was a 3,500. So it was about $80,000 for this truck. So you have an $80,000 truck towing a $250,000 mobile home. And that was a benefit because prior to the 3,500 being able to tow this much weight, because it, you know, 31,000 pounds, prior to it being able to tow that much weight, you'd have to do a different class truck, you know, one of those pure diesels with, you know, basically a small semi was what you'd tow with this. And so it's quite a bit of savings for people that want to tow this much around and live that lifestyle. Here's the thing. If you live that lifestyle, give me an email. I gotta know. I'm so curious on your thoughts behind living that lifestyle and what you do and why. And yeah, mostly why. Yeah, mostly why. So give me a call, an email at tim@pickuptrucktalk.com because I am really curious. So let's move on. Let's keep talking heavy duty. We have Super Duty. We have the big news that hit the news cycle from the Texas State Fair was that the Ford is offering a new Super Duty Limited. So it's just another trim level. Again, a fancier trim level. What's got all the people a buzz about it is that it's going to reach the $100,000 mark. Yes, that's right. So its MSRP is about $94,000. But when you add up all the different features and different options, and then you add in the taxes, title, and license fees, you are going to be pushing $100,000, quite literally. Ford is offering this Limited on their F450, which they maintain is the same GVWR as the F350, and that it should be in the same class, which I don't know. I don't really buy that, but that's okay. The starting MSRP for the Limited in the F250 and four-wheel drive is $80,000, F350 is $82,000, and F450 is $87,000. And if you check out all the boxes, it's 94 plus taxes. It's just crazy to me how expensive that has gotten. So this goes on top of the Lariat, the King Ranch, and the Platinum. It's one level above those. Remember about 12 years ago now, the Super Duty the King Ranch came out. And now we're at the point where we're adding levels on top of that. And so I was going to tell you about the interior. And I got to say this. They have two-tone leather seats, premium stitched leather wrap steering wheel, armrest, and steering panel. This is the interesting thing. Myco, which is a trademarked suede headliner. Again, like Ram, Ford is talking about the headliner. And I felt this headliner in the Ford product. I felt it in the Ram product too. I can tell you that the Ford headliner feels better than the Ram headliner. But incrementally better. It's not anything that I would even notice. When's the last time you hopped in the truck and reached up and played with the headliner? I don't know anybody notices that. Maybe I would because I'm a journalist, but come on. That's crazy. But this suede headliner, it felt like one of those Chanel bags, like one of those really expensive high-end purses. I just was stunned by that's where we're at. We're in talking about headliners as far as the interior features on a truck. Yeah. Oh, and this is kind of fancy. It has a dedicated serial number laser etched on the center console armrest. Yeah. They take the serial number of the truck they built and they laser etch it on the center console armrest. That's the level we're at. So I don't know. It seems a bit over the top for me, but you know, I'm sure there's people that want this and they'll buy it and they'll sell it. I'm sure. It's just kind of interesting. So the other news, and I didn't get to see this news, which is once unfortunate, was Nissan Armada Platinum Reserve debuted. So Nissan has for quite a while had the Platinum, and now they're adding Platinum Reserve. So again, like everybody else, they're taking it up another notch on luxury. And this is the Armada. This is their huge three-row SUV. It's the most luxurious SUV they've ever built. It actually is coming up close to the Infiniti QX80 or 90. I can't remember the ones. I think it's 90. So, you know, Nissan's bumping up against their luxury brand because they're offering such a high grade in the Nissan product. So, you know, you got 20-inch wheels, you got dark chrome exterior, interior, two-tone leather pointed seats, black quartz and premium wood interior tone, and embossed Platinum Reserve emblem on the console lid. Yep, that's what we got. It's going to be $64,590 for four-wheel drive, $61,690 for two-wheel drive. Should be out in like mid-October. It's joining the other midnight editions, the special editions. So, Nissan's doing some fun stuff with the Armada. They're really trying to keep sales going and really trying to keep the profit going. I don't know. I did not, like I said, I did not get to see it. I will get to see it hopefully pretty soon and see what the, see how it looks. But, you know, that's a lot of luxury and a lot of big price tag for a three-row SUV. So, moving on to other news that's not Texas-related. Have you signed the petition yet? Have you done it? Have you gone online to sign a petition? If you don't know what I'm talking about, I got a phone call from Shell last week, and they were starting a program where they want to name the pickup the official vehicle of the United States. Yes, Shell Rotella Engine Oil is leading the charge. So this is the whole deal where you can go on and sign the petition, and the petition goes to the White House, and the White House looks it over and decides what they want to do with it. The campaign is called Pickup Pride, and they're basically just, you know, getting the pickup out in front of people. That's about it. They want to make it the official vehicle of the United States, and also kind of pump out their Shell Rotella as well, kind of along the way. They have some new oils. I've been writing on these oils a little bit lately because their new multi-vehicle oil can be used in both a gas and a diesel engine. So instead of having two different quarts of oil that you can't mix, they have one oil, one solution. So I think that's kind of cool. So here's the deal. You must go online. There's a link on the website to go there. The signatures must be collected within a 30-day period. So you have until November 2nd, 2017, to get out there and vote. And I think it's an easy vote, right? You just go. You do 100,000 signatures. You go. You click the button. You say yes, because that's the right answer. Yes, the pickup should be the official vehicle of the United States. And there you go. And there it is. The link is on the website. I'm going to see if I can't click on that and see where we're at. I'm going to give you a live update. Well, live update is we need a lot more signatures. So 545 people have signed. Get out there. Sign. Make it happen. So, yeah, that's all I have to say about that. I'm going to sign up right now. Other news that is kind of shocking and kind of awe-inspiring, I should say. Have you seen the Toyota TJ Cruiser concept? Not the FJ. I didn't misspeak. You know, Jill's not here to correct me. It's a TJ. It is going to be shown at the Japan Auto Show, or the Tokyo Auto Show. The TJ concept stands for Toolbox Joy. It's bizarre. It's basically like a Honda Element with all the way fold-down seats made by Toyota. And Toyota's actually talking about really building this. Like, they're going to offer it in a front-wheel drive and a four-wheel drive, a 2-liter engine, 8-speed transmission. I believe 8-speed. 2-liter engine, maybe 6-speed, because they've used 6-speed all over the place. Automatic transmission. It's going to be mated to electric motor. I don't know. This thing is bizarre. I'm kind of happy it's going to stay in Japan and overseas, not come over here. It's one of the wildest looking vehicles I've ever seen Toyota do a concept of. Yeah, so check it out. Pickuptrucktalk.com. It says shocks and awes. That was the only headline I came up with because I don't know. I still don't know what to say about this thing. But I do know what to say. Coming up, we're talking with Dan Edmonds. Dan Edmonds did this really cool thing. He took a Tesla Model X, that is their SUV, and he hooked up to a camping trailer, and he went camping with the Model X. So fully electric, so he had, you know, limited range, and he had to drive up in the mountains in California and get to a place outside of Tahoe and called Truckee, which is kind of a cool name for it, too. He had to get up there and go camping and plan his stops along the way. We had a really great conversation, and I could have literally let it go for another 35 minutes because we were still talking afterwards. I think I have one point to add that it did not make it into the interview was that how impressed he was with electric vehicles towing, in that you just set cruise and you just go. Like, the electric motor makes up for the ascents. Like, if you have to climb, it'll take care of that. And it doesn't really, you don't even really notice it because there's no revving of the engine. There's no downshifting. There's no changes in the vehicle. You just go. And so I thought it was really interesting. So we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV talk. I'm going to have Dan come up next, and then I'll close it out with our last segment. And welcome back to more Pickup Truck Plus SUV talk. I'm on the phone with Dan Edmonds. He's the director of vehicle testing at Edmonds. Just a coincidence, not his company. I feel like we always have to say that every time I have you on the show.
I know, right?
Right. So welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. And this time we're talking about something really, it's really fantastic, actually. I think that's the best way I can describe it. We have he took a 2016 Tesla Model X. This is the SUV with the funky doors. It gets a lot of attraction for the doors. But you actually used it. You went towing with the Model X. That's a little bizarre. Did you get many weird looks on the highway?
Yeah, quite a few. It's unique. I've seen plenty of Model Xs in Southern California, but I've never seen anybody towing anything, even though they have a really nice integrated tow hitch, and it's actually pre-wired for electric trailer brakes. If you wanted to really install one of those things on the dashboard, you could do it. All the wiring's there. It can tow 5,000 pounds if it comes with the standard 20-inch wheels and 3,500 pounds for ours with the 22-inch wheels. So we figured, let's go tow something.
Yeah, so you took this is a really cool name too, a Happy Camper, HC1. Happier Camper, 1,500-pound camper. You took it to the back of the Model X. You went basically up to Truckee, California. I'm going to say Truckee. I know it's kind of Tahoe, but I think Truckee is the better word for it, area. Mm-hmm. And you went from your offices. So you had a three-part series of videos. It's on YouTube. You can see it. I'm going to share it on our sites. So walk us through. So you're pitching this idea. You're going to do it. I know you did a lot of planning. I know you're that kind of guy. How much time did it take preparation before you hit the road, actually?
Well, I mean, there is a little bit of preparation necessary when you're using Tesla on the supercharger network anyway, but it's not too bad because there's tons of range and you can hop from one to the next. You pretty much just have to know that there are superchargers on the route you want to take. But when you're towing, the consumption is just about double. You know, it's like fuel economy towing with a gasoline vehicle is much worse than when you're not towing. It's the same thing. But what that means is your range is cut way in half. So just getting to the next supercharger is something that you have to kind of look at and really decide, you know, how much time do I have to spend at each one before I can unplug and go on. And so there's some definite planning along that. And you want a route where, you know, there's some campsites that are fairly close to where you're charging and you got nice scenery, you know, typical camping stuff, but you have to add in this charging factor.
Right. I think that really played out in day one when you had to stop early and charge because you had a little bit of range anxiety with what the numbers are telling you on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. We were, I think our second stop, you know, we'd left Mojave, desert town in the Mojave Desert, as it turns out.
No.
And, you know, we were, who knew, right?
Right.
So we were headed to Lone Pine, which is 118 miles up the road. But 118 miles, you know, is a little bit tight, you know, if you assume that the range is half what it normally is when you're towing. And that's a little bit of an overstatement, but not much. Well, then you're looking at 240 miles. And that's what our Model X has for a full range on a full charge and extended mode. You know, it started out with 252 when we bought it, but, you know, it's got 20-something thousand miles on it. Now the most we see when we plug it in is 241 miles, and that's a whole other issue. You know, the battery is aging a little bit. So we've got, you know, basically a pretty tight squeeze there, and then you add in the fact that we're going to gain about 1,000 feet in elevation, so that's going to add a little bit to it. And it's hot. It's 100 degrees out at that point. So that's going to add to it if we want to run the air, and you know, you want to run the air if you can. And then there's the, you know, the unknown factor of will we encounter a headwind or not? And headwinds are, you know, underrated as a problem for electric vehicles, especially on the supercharger network, because, you know, a grade, you climb a hill, you know, it's going to be 6 miles and then you're down the other side, but a headwind could last for dozens, hundreds of miles, you know, depending on where you're at. So it might be a permanent fixture for the entire leg and you can't see it coming. You just kind of encounter a headwind and then you're or a tailwind, you know, but you have to plan for that in the desert because it's often windy. So when we're at Mojave, we spent a lot of time filling the battery 100%. And, you know, batteries fill really quickly at first, but to fill them to the brim, it takes a long time. It's kind of like taking a pitcher of water and trying to fill a glass. If the glass is empty, you can dump the water in. But as it gets closer to full, you got to go down. And when you get right near the brim, you got to drip it in if you don't want to spill it. So batteries fill like that. So we were there an hour and 37 minutes, I think, at Mojave before we unplugged. And then we got on the road and the range started to look like it wasn't going to be sufficient. So we had to pull off at Inyokern and top up before we went on to Lone Pine.
And I got to say, I think you brought up some really great points throughout the videos, and I kind of want to go through these kind of step by step here.
Sure.
As we're talking range, and I think people need to understand that you have a lot of data in the car at your disposal. Like you're flipping your screens. I mean, you're keeping really close track of what's going on with the data. Did you ever get to the point where you had like your favorite screens or screens you always set to the home, or were you constantly just amazed how much data you're able to get from the car?
Well, the data that is the least useful is the little range meter that everybody looks at on the dash next to the speedometer, because that one totally ignores the fact of your speed or whether you're towing or not. That is the best case range. And unfortunately, a lot of people are magnetized to that because it's the one that's right next to the speedometer. But on the center screen, there's a consumption graph that you can display. And if you're going to do something like this, you pretty much have to keep it up there the whole time. And if you look at that graph, you know, it's a big chart and it looks like a earthquake seismograph printout, you know, basically uphills and downhills. It goes all over the place. It's never static unless you're cruising straight and level with no wind and on cruise control. And even then it wavers because the road does. But anyway, you want to keep that one up. And it basically has a 30-minute or a 15-minute or a 5-minute span that you can set it to so that you can kind of look at the trip in kind of an overall sense or or more close to what you're doing right now. And that graph is in watt hours per mile, which is a consumption unit, which is pretty close to kilowatt hours per 100 miles, which is the way EV consumption appears on a window sticker, but it's in a little bit more palatable format. They just, you know, instead of it's watts instead of kilowatts and per mile instead of per 100 miles. So I don't know why they decided to do it differently, but they did. Anyhow, that screen you're looking at all the time. And, you know, in order to achieve the rated range, I think par for a car is for a Model S is like 305, I think. And for a Model X, it's about 330. Watt hours per mile. So if you can keep it at 330, which is the kind of a right in the middle of the graph, then you'll reach the rated range and the range that appears near the speedometer. But if you are towing a trailer, you're not going to do that. And so this graph kind of shows where you are relative to par, and you know, it tops out at 900. You know, when I'm going up a grade, it's off the top of the chart, and the chart doesn't go up high enough when you're towing a trailer up a grade. Yeah. But over to the right, it has the projected range, which will tell you how many miles you'll be able to go if you keep doing what you're doing right now in this 5-minute period or the 15-minute period or the 30-minute period. So you can flip between those three and kind of, you still have to work out in your head if you're going to make it or not. Right. Because it doesn't know what's ahead of you, but you do.
Yep. Yeah, and that you brought that point up in several times with the headwinds or the grades of elevation or what's going on. But you were messing around with that quite a bit in the trip. Like, you had one spot where you got a little nervous, and you changed the speed from 55 to 53 miles per hour. So you made this, most people consider it a minute change, but when you're towing a load with an EV vehicle, it made a big difference.
Well, it made enough of a difference. You know, the thing is we were in a situation where if you put in a destination in the navigation system, and I always did that, but the destination was always the next supercharger I was headed to. So it would be able to kind of give me a predicted battery charge when I arrived. And so if there's a destination, it knows where you're going, it will tell you how much electricity you should have when you get there. And so as I'm going up the grade towards Mammoth, which is the leg where we had to gain 4,100 feet over 100 miles of driving, but it was really more like 5,300 feet, you know, if you count it like a cyclist, you know, every time you go uphill, even if you go downhill a little bit after it, you know, it still feels like you're going uphill. So, you know, it was a lot of climbing on that route. And so the predicted range started to drop from like 27% when we started out to like 13 and then 12, and it looked like it was going to go to 11. And so at that point, I slowed down a little, but not much, because I was trying to just see if I could get to stabilize, and I still want to get there. I mean, I didn't want to creep up at 45 miles an hour. And, you know, aerodynamic drag varies with the square of speed, so small changes can kind of have a bigger effect in terms of aerodynamic load than you might think. So that's about a 10% reduction or a 9% reduction in drag. I was just guessing, but I figured it out later. Anyway, I just wanted to see, you know, balance getting there and not creeping along with stabilizing the battery. And that seemed to work. And then the end of the grade came, and we ended up getting there with about 12 or 13%, which sounds like, oh, you had 12 or 13%. What are you worried about? Well, you're worried about a detour that you don't know is ahead of you. You're worried about a headwind. You don't want to just run it too close, because you might get caught with your pants down.
Yeah, and it's not like you can run to the gas station and get a box of energy and just plug it in. Another feature you brought up was the braking regeneration and towing. Like, you know, most electric cars, they have a braking regeneration. So if you put on the brake or you slow the car down with the brakes, it'll help recharge the battery. And you found that to be just seamless with towing as well.
Yeah, that's a question that we got from a lot of people before we did it. You know, as you say, electric cars have regenerative braking, which is really just a scheme where when you let off the throttle, in some cases, depending on the car, or touch the brake pedal, it's not really putting pads to rotors. It's basically changing the electric motor into a generator and using the magnetism of the motor to slow the car. You know how you that force that when you try to put two magnets together when the poles are the wrong way and they won't do it. Well, they're using that force to slow the car and to generate electricity in the process. You know, they electric motors just work backwards like that. And what's great is you get quite a bit of slowing. But, you know, people who are thinking, well, yeah, but you've got a trailer pushing behind you, it's not going to work as well. It works the same. You don't really notice any different. There's plenty of braking force. So just about every time I slowed down, it wasn't a matter of touching the brakes. It's just lifting off the throttle and letting the electric motor slow the car. And then, you know, a Tesla is always, you know, if you're at a coming up to a stop sign, you got to cover the brake for the last 5 miles an hour because the regenerative braking doesn't take it all the way to zero in that car. But it's no different with the trailer. So it was neat. I didn't have the electric trailer brakes hooked up. And even if I'd gone through the trouble, it wouldn't have mattered because I never really touched the brake pedal.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I was watching that pretty closely, and it seemed like it was pretty pleasurable driving with that setting up. I want to go ahead.
That's the thing. You know, this range anxiety is like a big part of the story. But the other part of the story is, you know, if we ever get the electric charging part worked out, towing with the car with an electric motor is actually pretty good. There's a lot of things that we learned that were real strong positives other than this plugging in and waiting so long to wait for it to charge part.
Yeah, and you talked about that, and you used the word I thought was very well thought out, was the zen of traveling, in that, you know, when you're towing with the Model X, you're taking your time. You're going to stop and see the small towns. You got to plan out, like you had one morning where you wouldn't charge and you had breakfast, you know, while it charged. I mean, you have to think about traveling differently than it is get interstate, set cruise to 70, and just get there as fast as you can. You know, and in the other case, you're taking your time, kind of enjoying or maybe not enjoying, if you're waiting around for the charge, the art of the traveling. How was it now that you're back in the office and reflecting on it? Was it, did you think about the camping now as just the camping itself, or do you think about the entire journey as more of the event?
Well, I mean, I've driven the Model S before on the Supercharger network, so I kind of knew I was in for these waits. I think it really depends on what your goal is for camping. If your goal is to like get somewhere and then spend all your time there, well, then you might be frustrated by how long it takes to get there. But if you're in a, you know, mood where I'm going to just kind of like go, you know, short hops, frequent stops, you know, stop and smell the roses kind of thing, then this is actually pretty compatible with that, as long as where you want to go is served by superchargers. And, you know, there are options that we didn't explore. You know, the Model X and the Model S, for that matter, has a adapter for its charge cord that will plug into a NEMA 1450 receptacle, which is the ones you find at RV parks. So, you know, I could have diverted off from a supercharger to an RV park if that's where I wanted to camp. I don't typically like to camp at RV parks, especially, you know, with a small rig like this. But you could do that and then be plugged in while you're at the campsite, because that's what those campsites have. They're, you know, you've got power. So that allows you to stray off the supercharger network and go to some other places. We could have stopped at any number of RV parks along our route instead of where we did stop. But again, we'd made the choice of doing kind of dry camping because of the scenery.
I think that's a really interesting point. So there, you know, there's a lot of retirees that maybe could do a system like this and do some camping and traveling. You don't use gas, and as long as you take your time and stop at different parks with, we call them improved campgrounds in Nebraska, where they have power there. You could stop at improved campgrounds on your way across the country, and just you could literally travel for next to nothing, because your fuel prices are basically the biggest part of doing a camping trip.
Yeah, and if you were going to pay for a campsite with improvements anyway, well, that's where you'd be filling up at least part of the time.
Yeah, and you know, you just have to deal with the different issues that come up with it. Like, you know, you brought up running the AC. You had the comical 5 minutes of trying to get the sunshade up to cover the window. That was pretty funny to watch. So I think you have to, you know, balance the traveling aspect with where you're gonna be, and you just as long as you're willing to take the time and make it a journey, I think that the answer is the Model X is pretty darn capable.
Yeah, and I think even the larger issue is when, you know, we're early days in all of this electric vehicle business. And if, you know, we get, let's say Tesla decides to bring the battery swap scheme back, you know, which they talked about initially, and they had a prototype station that operated in California. If those stops were just 5 minute battery stops to just swap out the battery and then you go again, that would change the whole dynamic substantially. So, you know, there's, you know, the charging time is probably only going to get better as time goes by. So, if we kind of assume that that will develop like electric vehicles are developing all sorts of fronts, this could become more viable than it seems like it was, you know, in this trip.
Yeah, it was fascinating to watch. Make sure you check us out on the Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. All the videos up on our Facebook page. Make sure you find Dan on Twitter at Edmunds_test, and Edmunds.com has all the videos as well. And you know what? Thank you again for being on the program. I think it was just really interesting to watch the whole trip play out, and I'm so glad you videoed the whole thing.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun to do too. Really enjoyed it, and I really liked that trailer too. That Happier Camper trailer. I can't say enough good things about that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll wrap back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. And finally, on today's episode, I'm going to talk to you about some soul. Do you got soul? I'm not sure I got soul. Like the Kia Soul I'm driving this week. Ha ha ha. All right, that was all I got. I'm driving a 2017 Kia Soul. I've never driven a Kia Soul before. If you're not aware of what this vehicle looks like, it's a box on wheels, quite literally. Look it up. It's kind of got some funky styling, obviously, to it since it's a box on wheels. Interesting placement on the bottom for the fog lights. They just kind of are like little bit bug lights on there, and some really. This is I have a gray one. It's got some red stripes along the sides of it. I gotta tell you, I don't know on this one. I just don't know. I drove it around a little bit. It's got the 1.6 liter turbo gas and fuel injected. It's got a 4-cylinder 1.6 liter turbo, 7-speed transmission that works okay. It's a little whiny, a little underpowered. Had to really get on it to get moving. 18-inch alloy wheels, which seem a little large for the vehicle. It's not a big vehicle. I've put down the seats. I was able to get my golf clothes in there with the second row folded down, and boy, you know, that's about as much room as it got. I could barely get them in sideways in the rear of it, which always is a little frustrating to have to put down the seats. It's an interesting styling inside. You just basically sit inside of a box and you cruise around. I will give them credit for the interior. It just looks funky and it kind of matches. To me, it's like the Mini Coopers. I mean, it's a whole styling thing if you're into that. The price point of this one was $27,620, and I don't have any fuel economy numbers. So it's an interesting vehicle. I don't know that I wrap my head around, you know, if it works in the country. I don't think it does. I think it's a city car for sure, and it's definitely a styling car for, you know, if that's your personality and that's what you like about vehicles, this is the one for you because it is unique, and I don't think you'll see something else on the marketplace with it. So that is my yeah, that's my takes on the Kia Soul. I'm driving some of the cars this week, so I don't have anything to say on those. So maybe I'll drive a little more this week, and I will let you know my final thoughts on the following show. But it's so funky. I'm just not sure. I need to, I guess, really experience it some more. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Make sure you find us on Facebook on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk on the website, pickuptrucktalk.com. And we'll see you down the road.